It is time for the Berkshire Edge on air. You can find the Berkshire Edge at theberkshireedge.com, supplying news and information for the South County area and all surrounding areas as well. And I guess it's time that we can now say hello to Marcy and David. Good morning.
Hello. Hello. Good morning.
So now, I tell you, I love following your stories. I love following the news on Berkshire Edge, and I love following the pot stories. I've been following now this story.
Why are you so interested in pot?
Because it's so interesting to see the way that Berkshire County, and at first it was Great Barrington, singled in on Great Barrington, but now there's other things going on. And I never thought, listening to all the townspeople and watching all the stories, that the select board would approve this project in Sandusfield, but like my betting always goes, I was wrong.
Well, Sandusfield just approved a very big cannabis growing operation.
Right. Well, it's a big boom to the town finances, that's for sure.
Yeah, it will be. Now, these are the people who have just been approved in Sandusfield who were proposing an operation in Great Barrington on in Housatonic. There's an industrial area, an area that's zoned for industrial purposes in Great Barrington. But it's also along a road that's that has a lot of homes, and there was a huge
outcry
last year. They changed their name from Fulcrum Enterprises to Sama, and they started work on this operation in Sandusfield, which was just which was approved by the select board last night, and it's a very big operation. I'm just trying to look for the.
I looked at your story. It is a big operation. It involves a lot of acreage, and it involves a lot of, okay, you're approved, but you're approved doing this. I mean, there are a lot of conditions that have to be met.
There are a lot of conditions. It's very specific.
Yeah.
And apparently, you know, they have also been, vetted by the state as well, because a lot of the local people said, well, we don't know who these people are, but the fact is that the state has put them through a rigorous review. They're going to start building within 12 to 18 months, and the project includes a 5,000-square-foot processing building and 23 greenhouses on concrete slabs totaling 100,000 square feet on 46 acres of vacant land, some of it forest and some of it overgrown, in Sandusfield.
This is a big operation.
Let me put it this way. You know, back in the 70s when I was in Kingston, New York, and I was in the radio, this would have been the ultimate dream for us. Holy smokes. It's the Taj Mahal of pot.
Yeah, it's pot. I mean,
well, you know what we say, what goes down comes around, you know? And, I know. Who would have thought?
Well,
But there are abutters who are very upset about this. And I think that the objections are the smell, but also, you know, they're going to have fencing and lights, and I can see that is there's security fencing, lighting, cameras.
Not only the security fencing though, but the potential for people wanting to break in. To these places, and yes, the smell. I mean, anybody who's been in a retail marijuana shop just realizes right away what it smells like, and you can just imagine what the smell is like and the processing section of it. But supposedly there are mitigation realities that'll take most of that away, which because there is an intense smell that goes with it.
Well, our article doesn't say. I mean, there are lots of conditions, and I haven't read them all, but I presumably, you know, some sort of smell abatement is part of that.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
From what I was reading.
But, you know, there's
Sandersfield, though, remember, is a sparsely populated town. I mean, it's not like it's in the center of Great Barrington or Lenox or something like that. You
know? Well, also the great thing about it, and I think where the town's smart in doing this, is New York now state has approved the sale of marijuana. It's going to take about a year to put in place. Connecticut is well on the way to put it in place.
Yes.
So there's going to be plenty of places for this product once it's grown and put together be sold, and not necessarily sold in Sandersfield, but sold elsewhere.
Oh, yeah, right. It's not. I mean, this is not a retail operation.
Yeah.
It's an actual commercial business.
Like a factory, really, basically.
It is a factory.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's an agri-factory in a way.
Well, in a way, it's sort of like a dairy farm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also has its odors.
Listen, I live across the street from a house that used to be. Down the street from a house that, had cows. And boy, there were some times that the smell was very pungent coming from that barn.
You know, cows, horses, any type of agriculture is going to bring about that. I just found it, like I said, I would have bet on the wrong side, so Sandersfield has approved that. I want to move on to your next story, though, because for parents dealing with your child at home during the pandemic. I know here, Maddie, during the pandemic, has to flip her schedule at a moment's notice. And we're small enough where we can adjust to that, and there's no problem with that. But really, these are tough times if you're a parent and you've got students in school and you have everything that's going on with COVID-19.
Yeah, that's true. And parents are scrambling to figure out how to deal with this situation, as our schools, you know. But in any case, this is a story about a what's called CLUB, which is an acronym for Community Learning in the Berkshires. And it's a way for kids to, in a way, get educated. It's an interesting concept.
Yeah, it takes place. There is an organization called Greenagers, which has a beautiful piece of property in what town is it actually? It's in Egremont, I think.
It's in Egremont.
And they got together with another very interesting program called Flying Deer. Flying Cloud Institute. And they have been running a very interesting educational program together since last September, because they were concerned about about the detrimental effects of school closing, and so this is a kind of hybrid learning model where kids actually came there physically and did all kinds of outdoor activities and, around nature and growing and planting. And it is now, Hannah Van Sickle wrote about it, because it's now ending since students are going to be able to go back to school, in the coming months. This is a very interesting program.
It's a hybrid.
Yeah.
And it's a way to taking advantage of the Greenagers is a really interesting organization. In fact, we had a group of young people who plant gardens for people.
Right. Right.
And they have their own center in Egremont, but they do offer to come around and build a garden for you in your yard.
Right.
It's quite a wonderful organization. We've taken advantage of it.
Yes, we have raised gardens.
Yeah, we have raised beds that they built.
But at any rate, I mean, this was a very interesting experiment where the kids came and you know, they played games, they worked in gardens, they learned about outside activity, you know, about growing, and the kids seemed to, they had about 45 kids, and they seemed to have enjoyed it tremendously. So she's writing, Hannah's writing about, you know, how it helped parents deal with having kids at home and how the kids enjoyed it. And, you know, and hopefully these kinds of experiments will continue, even though the kids are going back to school.
Yeah, but still, it's great. It's almost like a combination summer camp, also after-school program, during school. What do they say? Active bodies keep active minds. I mean,
right, that's right.
That's always been my problem in life. That's why my mind is wasted because I was never a kid.
You sound like you're pretty active, Marshall.
Well, probably.
He has to talk to us every week.
That's right.
I was active, all right, but we won't go into that. All right. Now, what's interesting? The next story really interests me because I am a graduate of 1971 in high school, Housatonic Valley Regional High School. And at the high school in those days, which had a student enrollment, by the way, of about 750 students at the high school back then, when you enrolled, you could enroll in the following categories. There was humanities, there was college prep, there was general. We also had the FFA, the agriculture, and people were kind of guided, and also like technical, with Olive Wolcott School, there was a technical school. People were kind of, during the freshman year, channeled down certain ways where they showed better interest. And your story here about the Berkshire Hills Regional School District, and where people are up in arms about the proposal to end the practice of tracking, and I happen to think, and I'm an old-timer, but I happen to think that tracking idea is a great idea because it benefits the student and offers the student more chances for success in the end.
Yeah, I mean, but apparently it's, you know, it is controversial, and I think it probably worked very well for the people who are, you know, the people at the very top and the people at the very bottom. But the kids in the middle who don't benefit from having smarter kids in their class probably are not benefiting so much from it, from the tracking. I mean, you know, the smart kids all get together, and the more challenged kids are left behind, and the kids in the middle probably, you know, never get the stimulation that they want. So I can see that there's an argument to do away with it.
Now, let me ask you a question about this program. When I was in school, you were assigned to one of those things. I was in college prep, okay?
But
the parents and with the and the counselors, you could interchange humanities courses, general courses. If you were having problems, like let's say, like I was having trouble with algebra and geometry, I went from college prep to general for those courses. There were other things like history where I went to humanities. So there were lots of options open.
Yeah.
Is that the way it's running up there or no?
Well, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I think what they're trying to do is kind of an odd proposal. Actually, it's kind of democratizing, you know, classes and trying to steer away from the kind of stratification of education. I'm not sure actually how they do it now.
It's one of those things that does take a lot of extra work, and if it's done properly, it will benefit everybody. But if it's put in as a general practice, where there's one ruler and it's this way, it's not bound to succeed. It isn't.
Well, you know, I think that in one way you can see what the motivation here is, that what they're trying to avoid is kids getting pigeonholed in a direction that maybe you know, would be misjudges them,
yep,
and underestimates their capacity. You know, and that's I think that's what the administration is trying to overcome.
Yeah, and they, you know, apparently there's years of research that revealed the damaging effects of long-term ability-level segregation in schools and demonstrates that students in heterogeneous classes perform better academically and socially. So, you know, our article has links to the research.
I can understand that because, like,
yeah,
I said, it wasn't set up that way. You had opportunities in different classes to attend to go to different levels. I mean, it was a lot of work, I'll be honest with, for the administrators and for the school counselors to keep on track of things. But I think with all the rules and regulations and federal and state mandates, something like this cannot receive possibly the attention, if it's going to succeed, that it needs, the individual attention to each student.
Well, you may be right. I think this, by the way, that this the Berkshire Hills Regional School District has some administrators and advisors who are part of an educational kind of think tank at Williams College, and I think some of these ideas are coming out of that. So it's interesting to see how, you know, what kind of thinking is going on in people who are assessing the effects, you know, the effectiveness of our educational system. So if they're, in a way, this is challenging the norms.
It is now. It is. It absolutely.
Yeah.
And that can be good, but it also can be.
Well, we'll see. Yeah.
It could be disastrous as well.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, but what I do admire about the people who are running with our school system is that they are thinking about this all the time. I mean, it's not just business as usual that they've got their system and they're sticking with it. But they really are looking at the research. They're tied into the sources of research, and they are constantly thinking about what's going to work best for the kids. So,
and they're exploring really innovative ideas, and that's, I think, one of the hallmarks of the Berkshire Hills school system. The superintendent, Peter Dillon, is a product of the New York City school system, actually, where he was trained there and had a position.
He's very well educated.
And is very well educated. So
right.
he's, in a funny way, he's daring.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
I want to move on to the next story.
Okay.
We won't mention him by name. We'll just call him the other guy. There's a cautionary book about the other guy, the dangerous case of the other guy.
The guy who left Washington in a presidential plane on January 20th.
As Joe Biden refers to him as the other guy.
Does he refer to him as the
yes,
other guy?
Yes, he does.
That's funny.
Yes,
he does. Like
what? T-O-G?
Yeah.
Tog.
So let's talk about this book, The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump.
Yeah. This is an interesting, this is a book by Dr. Bandy Lee, and Yale graduate, but she's also been trained at Riggs, Austin Riggs, and is a protege of Jim Gilligan, who lectures at Austin Riggs and is in Stockbridge. And it's an interesting look at the phenomenon of Donald Trump. And it's an interview. Our writer Sarah Wright. Is it an interview with her?
With Bandy Lee.
With Bandy Lee, the author. And it's fascinating, I think.
Well, it's fascinating because it's something that's going to linger on for a while, and you have 70, 80 some million people one way, and 70 some million another way. So the case of Donald Trump will continue for a while. Now, we only have a couple minutes left, and I want to get to the next story because it's really important, I think, for the future of our area, and that's passenger rail service between the Berkshires and New York, which would run through Canaan. Will it ever happen? And you have a railroad aficionado says that he imagines it could, and so do I. I think it's an important thing that's going to be set up for the future for our area.
Well, you must understand that this is a satirical piece.
Yep.
Because what Jack Trowell, he is a train buff, and well, there are a number of us, by the way, and I include myself in that number, who are yearning for the return of passenger rail travel, which would come up through Canaan,
yep,
you know, up the old Housatonic line to Pittsfield, and go down to New York, which would be, I think, a great boon to this area if we could restore that transportation link. But what this is imagining is he calls it the return of a passenger train to Ripton, which is this imaginary Berkshire town. And by the way, there is a long-standing tradition that goes back many, many years, actually, of this imaginary town called Ripton. And we've had stories off and on about it. And there's a number of writers who have kept this, the legacy and history of Ripton alive. And every so often we have a writer who will pick this story up and carry it forward, but this is one of them. But, you know, it has this aspect of being actually true. People are interested in restoring rail travel, and it would go right through Canaan, by the way, if it ever happened.
Well, you know,
there is an organization, a train committee,
yep,
based in Great Barrington that is tracking this whole development of trains very carefully and raising money and, you know, lobbying and paying for studies and that has a lot of community support. I mean, we would really like to have trains coming back. I mean, I'd like to be able to get on the train in Great Barrington and go to New York instead of having to drive all the way to Wassaic and then take one train from Wassaic to Southeast and then change trains to Southeast and go, you know, go into New York. I mean, I think we would benefit, and as would Connecticut. And I think that, you know, to have the train coming through Connecticut into the Berkshires and having a good, reliable train would be a terrific boon. Massachusetts has been very much in favor of it, and, you know, and during Deval Patrick's administration, the state actually put aside money or allocated money to improve the train, the tracks, which is being done in the Berkshires.
Right.
The problem, as I understand it, is Connecticut has not allocated an equal amount, or their share. You know, we're hopeful that maybe part of Biden's infrastructure, Biden likes trains. And, you know, there may be money in the infrastructure bill to maybe, you know, bring trains back. So.
It would be nice, and we'll see what happens. But Connecticut has to get along with Massachusetts and also with the federal government to get the funds. And hopefully one day in the next few years that'll happen. We're out of time, guys. Look at that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
You know, Marshall, if the train comes back, you know, we could visit you by just getting on the train here in Great Barrington.
That's right. And coming down.
That's right.
We could actually meet in Canaan and have some beer while we do the show. Okay. All right, guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Not at 8:30 in the morning.
All right, we'll pre-tape it. We'll pre-tape it in the afternoon.
Well, there is that wonderful station in Canaan, actually.
Yep, absolutely. All right, guys, we'll speak to you next week. That is the Berkshire Edge on air. And, of course, you can find information 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at theberkshireedge.com.